Conviviality. This is Josh Gabatois. You're listening to Textbook on CITR Radio 101.9 FM. We broadcast from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Hunkamina-speaking Musqueam people. Today, we have a real mixed bag for you. As usual, I'm here with Ava Naziri, who is coming to talk a little bit about some research that she's done. Ava, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Ava is also the outgoing president of the AMS. Head dog. Head honcho.
I like to think of it more as traffic control, but...
traffic control.
Call it what you will.
Okay, cool, cool. And how has that been?
It's been incredible. I'm so grateful to the team. I think that more than anything, that's made the biggest difference this year is just sort of how the exec team came together and worked collaboratively and, you know, everything was just so upfront, honest, and productive. And yeah, it's been fantastic. Thanks to them.
And this was your second year doing it?
No, this was my first year.
First year. Okay.
Before this, I was the vice president admin for about 2.5 years.
Okay, cool. And you're studying politics?
Poli-sci, yes.
Poli-sci. Yeah. Okay, cool. And so how have you found in the first place just like that? How have you found your academic work bouncing off of your work in kind of like a sort of political organization?
Yeah.
And that, how has that been?
You know, it's been really interesting because I never intentionally related the two. My becoming involved with the AMS had nothing to do with what I was studying, but rather what I enjoyed doing. And that was working with people and my realization that maybe I had a little bit to contribute to student groups on campus and empowering them to find the funding and support and resources they needed to succeed. So I stumbled into that with the Arts Undergraduate Society, and you know, some friends sat me down and said, you should do this with all the clubs. So I really stumbled into the AMS more as sort of a passion project, if you will. But in my last year of my undergrad, I took a course on democratic theory. And I think that was the big one that really clicked it all for me, because a lot of the content there was about the difference between representing based on the interest of just your constituents or in the interest of the greater good, and the difference between the two and the different results that you can expect to see. And there were a lot of relevant and recent examples of the different styles of democratic representation on both sides. And so being able to apply some of that in my sort of, you know, super focused fourth year seminar at AMS Council and looking at sort of some of our undergraduate society councils and the politics of the university as a whole, I'd say that was one thing that really tied it all together. And the second was in Poli 100.
Yeah.
First year, that's what got me into the whole poli-sci thing. We learned about the House of Commons and the Canadian Senate, and it all seemed very abstract. But this year, I actually got a chance to go to the House of Commons when we were doing some federal lobbying for undergraduate research opportunities and post-secondary support for Indigenous students. And to actually see the place and see the things that happen,
that was
the second sort of click.
Right.
And it all happened sort of post-mortem after the whole involvement thing had come in.
How was that being at the House of Commons? Like, what was that experience like? Were you, did it break the illusion of this kind of formality for you? Did it renew your faith in it? Or how was it overall?
It was interesting. I was really thrown in the first 10 minutes when they went into session, because MPs were standing and talking about, we had an apple cider festival in our district, and you know, like our varsity team did this competition, and I was like, literally, these are the politicians we're electing, and they're talking about, you know, like the hot chocolate day they had at their ice skating rink.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then I realized that that was introductions and opening remarks.
Okay.
And then they got to
then
the business.
Then the politics got serious. Okay, cool. Well, that sounds like a really cool experience. I want to talk to you today, though, about some research that you've been doing here, kind of closer to home. Do you want to tell listeners a little bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, first I'll clarify, I am not the one doing the research. I'm more just a participant in the research that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been really interesting so far. So it's a project called the Inclusive Planning Partnership that is happening under Dr. Maged Senbel at the School of Community and Regional Planning here on campus. And their aim is to do some research around how community and urban planning can be more inclusive of recent and long-term refugees and immigrants as some of the demographics that are traditionally less involved in community consultations and looking at ways that we can be more inclusive of them as they provide input on what the urban landscape and infrastructure looks like as part of a step towards eventually building a more generally inclusive society as
mm-hmm.
a whole.
Mm-hmm. So this is really, this seems like really an urban planning thing. Is this is out of Surrey, as I understand it, right?
SCARP.
SCARP.
Yeah, School
okay.
of Community.
Sorry, but out of like what neighborhood? What it's Greater Vancouver.
It's
so.
They're focused and they've actually formally partnered with the City of Vancouver and mm-hmm. the City of Surrey.
Okay.
So some of the urban planners and community consultation teams at both of those government bodies are directly involved in contributing to the mm-hmm. research that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, the aim, I think, is to inform the way that they do things,
mm-hmm.
and how they host consultation sessions in a more inclusive way.
Mm-hmm. Right. I know that Surrey, there's a lot of cool kind of planning opportunities in Surrey because unlike Vancouver, which is really dense, there seems like a lot of opportunities and a lot of, energy, I guess, over there. So line out for me a little bit the project. So you are... First, as part of this plan, there's consultations with refugees and new immigrants that are coming. And then how does it go from there?
So the first step was for the team putting together a sort of youth advisory council.
Mm-hmm.
And that's made up of people that were sort of found and recommended from some of the neighborhood houses in both cities, some of the sort of academic bodies of both cities, as well as some of the refugee relief and immigrant support structures that mm-hmm. are in place. So Mosaic, for example, mm-hmm. is one that has been a sort of very key partner. And so they put together the Youth Advisory Council, and this is a group of young people aged within the range, I think, of anywhere between 16 and 25 or 26. And so the first step was bringing together this group. And myself as a participant, I'm sort of part of that youth advisory group. And they ran a few sessions just introducing us to the project, doing a little bit of exercises around introducing the concepts of urban design, urban planning, and consultation. And then right now we're in the survey phase. So they've designed a survey. Last Friday we had a meeting where we tested out the surveys just to find any kinks and things like that. And then the month of April will be spent surveying two demographics, immigrants and refugees between the ages of roughly 16 and 30, and then 30 and above.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little bit of the sort of the generational divide, if you will, in terms of the targeted bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And the ideal is that, you know, the survey participants will be living either in Vancouver or Surrey. Once some of the survey data is back, that will be used to inform the next steps of the research, some analysis within the youth advisory group, and then very likely a second round of surveys, I think, a number of months down the line.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually recommendations to actually give tangible to-dos for the City of Vancouver and the mm-hmm. City of Surrey.
So as part of this youth advisory group, you're going to be conducting these surveys as kind of youth to youth is the idea here.
Yeah, well, it's youth to youth, and it's also youth to 30 plus.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the targets are, you know, at least 10 for any member. So myself, mm-hmm. the minimum expectation is 10 surveys, 5 below 30, 5 above. Mm-hmm. And, you know, ideally more, because the more data you have, the more mm-hmm. relevant the things you come up with.
Yeah, yeah. What are you and how are you feeling going into it? Are you nervous? Are you excited?
I'm astounded, I have to say. I think it's really honorable, the work that these PhD students and faculty are doing. It's meaningful work that I have a lot of faith will have a positive impact on not just the Lower Mainland, but what I hope is that, you know, their research will carry forward and inform other cities and other societies and communities mm-hmm. on how to be more inclusive. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where even if you are short on time, you find the time to help if you can. Mm-hmm. Just because it's, you know, if nobody else has done research on this so far, we have reason to be worried.
Absolutely. That sounds really exciting. Thank you so much for coming on today and telling me a little bit about that. And yeah, I really appreciate it.
Happy to be here. Thank you, Josh.
Yeah, and good luck going forward post-AMS.
Thank you.
I'm going to play a quick song here, and then when we come back, some talks with Ori from Inside Out Journal. First up, a little song by Sneaks, big favorite here at the show. Textbook, CITR 101.9 FM. This is Sneaks with the song Look Like That. Hi there, this is Textbook CITR 101.9 FM. I'm here with Ori Navarez. He is from Outside In, photo journalism of photography. What's the official title?
That would be Outside In Photo Journal.
This is a UBC student journal, and they publish photography and writing by UBC students. And this year, Ori, you have something in the journal.
Yes. So last year, I was actually involved with the journal in the social media side and also organizing a few events. But this year, I managed to submit a piece of work by myself, and it got submitted and was successful, and it was published. So, yeah, and that was exciting to see. It was only released about 2 weeks ago, the conference, the annual conference, yeah.
So let's start by just talking about the journal in general. Because you were involved last year, we'll start kind of temporal, and we'll go from there. So what is the idea behind the journal? Because this is pretty unconventional as far as student journals go.
Yeah, so the journal is essentially a chance or a platform for photojournalists at UBC to publish their work. It's the only one at UBC right now. So it does fill kind of like a niche that's unsatisfied, so to say, within UBC. And every year it seems that they end up having about 5 to maybe 7 different pieces of work that get submitted or get published. Mm-hmm. So it does. It does, you know, cover a lot of, you know, issues anywhere from, I think last year they were talking about the condensed living in Hong Kong and other in cities in Asia, and this year a lot about the environment. Mine was on modern tourism. There's others, you know, in different suburbs of Paris with different issues going on. So it is a chance for students that investigate issues all over the world to come together and put it into one journal in one place, which is nice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And is it tied to a specific faculty or discipline?
No. So the journal actually accepts entries from anyone and any faculty. I would say, though, that the journal is focused a lot from like an international relations or poli-sci kind of perspective, or, you know, as the theme every year is related to that. So, for example, this year it was global crisis.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that being said, the entries that end up in the journal are all over the place, mm-hmm. and can be anything, you know, really. So I had two friends that submitted this year. They're both in forestry.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a great perspective on a lot of environmental issues that are going on right now. Anyone, also engineering, science, myself in science.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so it's quite nice because you also bring a lot of different perspectives from different faculties and different ways of looking at similar issues.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's what makes it a really cool journal, isn't it? Tell me about your background. What are you studying?
So I'm in science. I do a combined degree in science in computer science, sustainable development.
Hmm.
And then I also do a minor in commerce with solder.
Wow.
So my degree in itself is all over the place.
Yeah, yeah.
And I like that about it. I like the diversity and being able to jump around and having skills in lots of different areas. But my article, you know, so to say, is completely unrelated. So, you know, like I was writing on modern tourism and the effects of mass tourism on cities and cultures, which, you know, is not really, I guess, to computer science or commerce, or somewhat to commerce, I guess. But
I would say to sustainability, maybe.
Yeah, it could be sustainable development in terms of, you know, resource supplies, energy demands.
But it wasn't something that you were drawing on.
No, not at all. Right. And I didn't actually draw on any of my studies to produce this article. So it's kind of nice, you know, just kind of going in with a completely fresh piece of work. Yeah.
Right. So, tell me a little bit about this article. What were you looking at and what were you kind of questioning? What was the research questioning you were taking up?
So, this article, so it's called Modern Tourism, and it all started back in 2014, so I left on an exchange year to the Netherlands. And while I was there, I spent a lot of time traveling around Europe. And so as I traveled, I'd end up in a lot of super cliche, I guess, tourist destinations, you know, Paris or
Berlin.
Saint-Michel, Berlin, yeah. And I sort of, you know, I'd be like a classic tourist, you know, go to these sites, take photos and experience it, and then... But one thing that I started noticing is I was intrigued by tourists, other tourists, and how they interacted with these destinations, and also how these destinations were altered or changed, you know, to accommodate tourists. So that led me to work on my photo project called Modern Tourism, which essentially I would go around. When I traveled, I would take pictures of tourists interacting with the destinations and also different sort of features that destinations now have because of tourists. you know, for an example, one of the first, I guess, realizations of this phenomenon was in Paris, you know, visiting a certain basilica, and then, you know, there's a sign, you know, no photos allowed out of respect for the church, but yet they have these, you know, coin machines where you like flatten a penny and like it makes that like loud cranky noise. There's like like all over the church. So I was like, wow, this is really bizarre. You know, like obviously there's something behind this that they don't protect the church without taking photos, but yet they offer these loud souvenir machines throughout the church. So I thought that was weird. You know, this is kind of like ironic or paradox with a lot of destinations like that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I just started becoming more and more attuned to these different things of the destinations I visited and started photographing them.
Hmm.
So yeah, that's kind of like where it all started. And that's the theme of the piece of work I submitted.
Right. Yeah. So that's, I mean, I think that's really interesting in the first place, just because you're going to these sites now, and instead of taking these kind of touristy kind of snapshots, you're now thinking about taking these maybe more detailed or more, I don't know, their focus has shifted in a way in terms of your photography. I think that's mm-hmm. really interesting stuff. So what were the couple of the destinations that you or tourist spots that you did?
So some of my favorite shots, I guess, of the work that was submitted, the Mona Lisa in Paris. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. What a great shot that one was. Out of the thousands of pieces of work in this museum, you have this massive crowd around the one painting. So, you know, I got this, you know, good shot of just a horde of people, you know, surrounding the cutoff line, just, you know, scrambling to just take a photo. You know, there's so many people. I remember seeing, you know, a lot of people kind of push their way to the front. They just almost be in the front. They can't even see the painting mm-hmm. with their own eyes, and then kind of lift up their phone
and
take
just
a photo above the crowd, then bring it down and look at it, and then just kind of peace off, you know?
So it is such a buzzkill going to see the Mona Lisa. My God.
Yeah, and there's one photo where I kind of push my way to the front, like it was right in front of the Mona Lisa, kind of turn around and mm-hmm. take a photo of the crowd.
Right.
And then that one's great because you can see the crowd with all these other works of art along the walls mm-hmm. with them all kind of rushing towards the camera.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's definitely one of my favorite shots, and I think encompasses a lot of kind of like the, I don't know, hypocrisy and just kind of odd, you know, intentions that tourists have with certain, destinations. Another one that I really liked was in Pisa. This is actually, I was inspired by another work that's pretty similar to what I did, which is A Small World by Martin Parr.
Mm.
So he also did something similar where he kind of photographed, you know, really bizarre tourists, you know, like a tourist standing under the Eiffel Tower in Paris, for example, wearing a shirt that says, you know, Alaska or something. So right. his work. So this
Martin
one
Parr has that kind of sense of humor.
Yeah. And so I was inspired by one of his photos of in Pisa, which is where, you know, you have the Leaning Tower and all these people pretending to hold up the Leaning Tower.
Right.
So you have, you know, the same photo. Everyone's taking it. Everyone goes there to take it. But yet Martin Parr positions himself slightly off, so it just looks ridiculous. You know,
right.
These people with their hands in just facing the sky, you know, pretending to hold up something. And then everyone, there's like about five of them all lined up there. So I tried to recreate that myself. And mm-hmm. I managed to get about three people doing it all at once with like nothing in the background, just standing there with their hands up, which I really liked. So I was pretty happy with that.
That's great. So why modern tourism? Why were you looking at this as kind of a modern phenomenon?
So that ties into actually also a personal aspect of the project. So for me, when I travel, I've at least through my experience, I now strive to, you know, gain a unique experience from my travels. You know, I want to go to a place that's kind of untouched, mm-hmm. where I can come in as an observer, learn something that's genuine and unique, and then leave, you know, with that knowledge and ideally bettering myself as a person. And so what happened is that, you know, as I traveled, I you know, realized that these destinations are so visited by so mm-hmm. many people that you can't achieve that anymore, in the sense that you're just one of maybe a million people that are walking through certain sites. And they have, that's the whole idea of the project, that they have, you know, altered the way they greet you and present things to you, and vice versa, you going with expectations, it changes. So the reason why I put modern in the title is because this is a recent phenomenon. Mm-hmm. You know, travel was never this accessible. It's never this cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also a personal struggle I have, because I like to, you know, reach these untouched destinations.
Right.
But the only way I can afford to get to them is because of mass tourism, which is in the modern era, which lowers the price of transport, you know, lowers the price of accommodation, and whatnot. So
yeah.
So I think that with the increase in efficiency of air travel, train, bus, everything, with lowering prices is a modern phenomenon, and that's what allowed me to go there. But yet, I don't, like what it brings as well. So.
Right, right. Yeah. So that's a kind of also when you have to think of yourself as a tourist, right? You're part of it as well, aren't
exactly,
you?
Exactly, yeah.
That's
yeah.
really tricky to do. Well, this sounds like a really great piece. How can people find the journal? How can they find out more? How can they submit themselves? Can you give us the lowdown?
Yeah. So the Outside In Photo Journal, they release one edition every year. They usually take submissions just before January.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually the cutoff. I think this year it was January 6th. You can find them on Facebook, just Outside In Photojournal UBC.
Mm-hmm.
I believe there's still a website. And there you can find links to this year's photojournal, and as well be up to date with what they have going on. They also had a Out of the Shadows photo exhibition, which is, I think, a offset project from the Global Reporting Initiative at UBC.
Hmm.
And then they also run a conference, about 3 to 4 hour conference every year, of which that's the official release of the journal. And they also bring in a handful of photojournalists, professional photojournalists, that give a few talks, which is really interesting.
Yeah, you guys have brought some big names before too. I remember seeing some, like New York Times photographers mm-hmm. there. Like it's pretty serious. It's great. So what are you looking at going forward? Are you interested in pursuing this more as you go on through your degree or graduate or?
That's a good question. That's sort of, I'm graduating in May, and mm-hmm. that's the hot question now.
Yeah.
I don't have a direct path, so to say, in this area, but I have a few projects that are coming up.
Cool.
I'll be going off to China for 3.5 weeks and visiting a friend in a small town just north of Chengdu.
Hmm.
So I'll be looking to hopefully to create some sort of story or document something out of that. And then I also have a big project for Canada's 150th birthday coming
cool.
up in July. And that one will be really exciting. We'll be hitchhiking across the country and just ideally, documenting the people we meet and trying
great.
To connect and educate other Canadians about Canada, essentially,
yeah.
for its 150th state.
Great.
The whole motive behind that is, a lot of Canadians don't travel their own country because it's so big, it's so
mm-hmm.
expensive to get
mm-hmm.
around. So hopefully we'll be able to bridge that. Yeah. So
well, that sounds great, Ori.
So yeah, we'll see. But after that, kind of unknown at this time. So
that's exciting, though. That's exciting in some way. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Yeah, no worries.
Yeah,
thanks for having
luck.
Me.
This next song is Austria Future Politics here at CITR 101.9 FM.
Still a hole somebody needs to heal. Yeah.
Hi, we're back. Textbook CITR 101.9 FM. I'm here in the studio with Neil Saini, who is from the Blank Vinyl Project. Neil, thanks so much for being with me today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
So I want you to talk to me a little bit today about Goose Hunt, which is a new, or I guess the upcoming event you guys have. It's not a new event because you guys have been doing it for the past couple of years. What's it all about?
So it's essentially just a culmination of all the bands that Blank Vinyl Project has worked with for the past year. And we put together 18 bands that we worked with extensively, whether it's like putting on shows at the Pit, mm-hmm. Or like recording them, mm-hmm. or doing photo content for them. And yeah, it's just a good time. 18 bands.
18 bands is huge.
Yeah,
in That's a huge bell.
I know. In 7 hours. So we'll
wow.
see. Like,
yeah.
yeah. And so it keeps on getting bigger and bigger every year.
Okay.
I remember in the first year, it was like, I think like 5 bands. And then it was like 7, 12, mm-hmm. and then now it's 18.
Next thing you know.
So, yeah. yeah.
So these are all UBC bands, or these bands that have passed through UBC? What's
yeah, all UBC
cool.
bands. I think all of them are currently UBC students. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. Mm-hmm. And this is taking place at Kerner's Pub.
Yeah.
Okay, that is a good space to do it, actually.
Yeah,
I kind of like that. Like,
for sure.
The outside inside, is the stage going to be?
There's going to be 2 stages. One in the inside. Kerner's works really well because we can do the 2 stages.
Yeah.
The inside one is more of acoustic vibes, kind of very chill
yeah.
artists. And outside is very hype kind of artists.
Right,
all kind of hype bands.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay, cool. That's mm-hmm. great. Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about BVP. I think CITR comes in contact with it a lot, but I don't mm-hmm. think a lot of listeners maybe will be familiar with it. Give me the rundown.
Yeah, so BVP forms, I think this is the 6th year it's running.
Okay.
The founder was Ben Chen. And he kind of discovered that there wasn't much, originally it was for essentially like a public record label for on-campus musicians.
Hmm.
So they were focusing a lot on just giving few artists a lot of resources. But then as kind of time progressed, BVP's transformed into kind of giving a lot of resources to a lot of artists.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of become a home for a lot of bands, where they can come and we have a jam space, we have a build-a-band program, we have a bunch of photographers that can work with musicians. So it's all about just fostering this huge community of musicians at UBC.
Mm-hmm. So you're really providing all that infrastructure. That's cool. What have you seen kind of, have you seen results? Like, what have you seen come out of the...
Yeah, I'm super proud of the build-a-band program that went on this year. It just keeps on getting better and better. It's pretty complicated to run this kind of program.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we started with around like 20 bands or something like that. And we actually had like around 6 bands that survived.
Cool.
And are actually like playing shows off campus
cool.
and all over campus
yeah.
now too. So that's pretty exciting.
Give some shout outs. Who are these bands?
One of them, we had a Band Wars contest recently, which was essentially just a contest, kind of like the Last Man Standing
mm-hmm.
contest AMS does,
mm-hmm.
but with just build-a-bands. And then one of the bands, super nice kind of neo-soul, rockish kind of band called Gentle Mind. Super sweet band that came out of it.
Cool.
So,
great.
Yeah, yeah.
What are the challenges that you guys have as kind of a group trying to do this on campus?
I think music is pretty hard to do. I'm sure you know this too, but just in terms of, because music has been around for so long, it's hard to kind of make it exciting all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Cause there's only so many bands that you have at UBC, and there's only so many things you can do with them.
Mm-hmm.
And we're a pretty big club, so we wanna be constantly doing things. So it's hard to come up with innovative things to do.
Yeah, and ways to kind of make it new and make it fresh.
Yeah, yeah.
The idea behind Goose Hunt this year, I think it's pretty funny, it's pretty clever. It's kind of like kind of do like Coachella type.
Yeah,
thing, right.
Yeah,
What's
yeah.
the idea behind that?
Well, every year we kind of have a theme,
right?
Which just kind of helps bring the whole event together,
mm-hmm.
right? And have some kind of consistency. We thought Coachella would be a fun theme.
Yeah.
I remember doing like Woodstock a few
okay,
years ago.
Cool.
So it's always these like kind of music festival themes.
Yeah.
So bring on like your flower crowns
right.
and tie-dye
yeah.
shirts and all
I mean,
that,
it's
so.
An easy target, isn't it?
Yeah,
Coachella
exactly.
H&M, the new H&M line, which is pretty nuts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah.
So tell me a little bit more about your work with BVP. What are you specifically doing with the group?
I've been involved in BVP for 3 years, and
mm-hmm.
I've done a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I remember in first year I joined as planning some of the smaller events, like the open mics and music swaps and all these smaller events. And then second year I worked as a sound technician. And that was pretty sweet. I got to really learn how to do sound, record mm-hmm. bands. I think I recorded like 30 bands in my second year.
Nuts.
So that was crazy. Yeah. And BVP gave me the opportunity to do that. So mm-hmm. I'm super thankful for that. And then in third year, I decided to become president. And it's been super sweet. It's mm-hmm. been, I've seen it grow for the past 3 years, and it's mm-hmm. been super exciting to see mm-hmm. to see it grow.
That's sweet. Well, we have tickets to give away for Goose Hunt, so yeah. listen for that on CITR. Mm-hmm. Neil, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah.
Neil Saini is a third-year commerce student here at UBC. Goose Hunt is coming up. Neil, what are the kind of details? Hard and fast details yeah. for the
Kerner's Pub, April 2nd. Doors at 6, music starts at 7, and it goes on till like 1.
Nine hours of music.
Yeah,
I think it might be the only music festival at UBC, so that's yeah. something to be proud about for sure. Neil, thank you so much. Up next we have a quick song here. This is Every Single Thing off of Homeshake's Fresh Air, CITR 101.9 FM.
Are you even paying attention to me right now?
Hey, we're back, CITR 101.9 FM. You're listening to Textbook here. I'm here in the studio with some folks from the F Word Conference. Thank you so much for coming by. I really appreciate it. Do you folks want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, for sure. Do you want to go first, Shruti?
Yeah, hi, I'm Shruti, and I'm a member of the GRSJ F Word Planning Committee.
Cool. I'm Michael. I'm also a member of the Planning Committee.
Great. GRSJ, great department. Why don't you tell folks a little bit about what it's all about for listeners who might not be familiar with the department and what you folks do?
Totally. Well, GRSJ stands for Gender, Race, and Social Justice, for those of you who do not know. And it's awesome. It's kind of centered. Well, the department itself came out of the Women's Studies Department.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume / kind of know that the women's studies just felt like it was something that required more of an intersectional analysis, and maybe women doesn't define what everything that they were studying. So gender studies coming together with race and social justice mm-hmm. and various intersectional feminist ideas and thought to create GRSJ, and here we are studying some awesome stuff.
Yeah, the history of the department, especially at UBC, and I think at other universities too, the way that those departments have evolved has been really interesting. And tell me a little bit about the F-Word conference, Siri.
Yeah, I can do that. So it's a conference. Well, this year's theme is, well, F-Word, first of all, stands for feminism/feminist.
Mm-hmm.
And we focus mainly on third wave feminism, which is all about inclusivity. So we're all about including everybody from all races, nationalities, like all at intersections together. And so this year's theme is a year in review, activism, navigating activism, solidarity, and navigating oppressions.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've decided on our workshops, and we will alert you to what they are as the time passes. We're not going to give anything away right now. And we've also gotten some amazing submissions. And we've narrowed it down. So it's shaping up to be a great conference. So it's going to feature student, undergraduate student presentations from all faculties and disciplines. Three keynote speeches, which is going to occur a little before lunch in the Great Hall in the Nest. It's all going to be in the Nest. And we also have workshops.
Yeah, tell me about the workshops. I didn't know about this workshop component.
Well, we can't give too much away. We can't tell you exactly what they are. But they're going to be very interesting and interactive, that's for sure.
The conference has been going on for a few years now. What has the conference seen in the past? How many years has it been going on, and kind of what's that history been like?
Well, this is the 8th annual F-Word conference, so it's been going on for 8 years. I can't speak personally too much. I'm a transfer student, and it's my first year attending the conference and planning, so I'm kind of being thrown into it. but from what I actually helped curate and redesign the website, grsjconference.wordpress.com, so you can check us out there. But that has a ton of... So in doing that, I found out a lot about the history of the F-Word and all the different amazing people who have been involved. There's been an incredible line of keynote speakers from previous years and workshops. Some of the workshops from past years will be coming back this year. Some are UBC-affiliated organizations. Some are from external organizations. So it's going to be a great lineup. And a lot of the people who have participated in past years come back, whether as attendees or, I mean, Shruti was, you were on a panel last year.
I was.
And so she's returning on the planning committee this year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty cool. And yeah, and tons of the faculty at UBC return every year and help out in different ways. So it's definitely a community that continues to grow and expand.
Mm-hmm. What has it been like studying feminism and studying these topics in a university setting? What are the challenges of that?
Do you want to go? Should I go?
I could say that because I've done a couple of courses in GRSJ. It's challenging in the fact that, well, from my courses, I learned a lot about, well, a lot about the world, the Western world, specifically Canada, that I felt very uncomfortable with learning that, you know, this is happening in the country that I live in the country that I guess have been idolizing for most of my life. But it's also very enlightening in a way that I'm learning these things and I'm aware of this. And I feel that it's a privilege, you know, to be in a university campus where we can freely express these kinds of thoughts and learn about these kinds of things. But at the same time, we have to be very cautious with what we say, you know, whether it's on social media or just whether, you know, we're walking and talking. So there's still that fear that, you know, the wrong person might overhear, but it's still great to have like the classroom setting where we can freely express what we're feeling.
Mm-hmm. And what about you? What about for you, Michael?
It's tough. I love studying in GRSJ. It's fascinating stuff, but it's also really heavy material. You know, you're talking about feminism or racism, transphobia, trans rights, trans issues. There's tons. There's so much we're studying. But I think the hardest thing for me is applying it to the everyday. We can talk about it in the classroom and have our little kind of community where we talk about feminism and solidarity and activism and these kinds of things. But really taking that out and, you know, if something happens on the bus, am I going to speak up? Is that the kind of thing I can do? Am I comfortable doing that? Or family dinners, you know, if I have a more conservative family, it can be hard to like step up. So it's definitely something that's like an inner battle, I think, for a lot of GRSJ students is is applying what we're learning about in classes to our real life in quotations mm-hmm. every day.
I know this is kind of, I dread this question in a lot of ways, but I was wondering if you folks could talk a little bit about maybe your interests or your research interests in the topic. Shruti, do you want to start off?
Yes. So I'm an English literature student, and the way that I got involved with GRSJ to begin with was 3 years ago by doing some editorial work for the journal they used to have. It's called Ignite. And then I learned about, you know, courses in this department. So I took a literature course where we kind of read fairy tales and, like, all those beloved children's stories that, you know, we grew up with, the Grimms or Charles Perrault, you know, we kind of learned just how deep and dark they are. So for me, the literary aspect of it was great, and also the intersectionality aspect of it was also amazing. I took a course in September, it's GRSJ 300, which is intersectionality.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally, if I identify with third wave feminism, because I think that feminism should be inclusive, not just focused on women's rights or white women's rights.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, men, you know, are just as important to this movement as women are, and all races, all genders, all colors, you know, everything is important. So for me, intersectionality and looking at these things in pop culture and literature and media is where my interest is.
Hmm. And what about you, Michael?
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I'm a transfer student, and my first semester at UBC, I kind of just took a bunch of random courses because I didn't really know what I wanted to take. Mm-hmm. And I took an awesome GRSJ course with Janice Stewart, who's one of the full-time faculty at GRSJ. And I kind of just fell in love with the class material and what we were talking about, what we were reading, and went down that route, I guess. But my particular area of interest is, I guess, GRSJ pedagogy or education, and how we can kind of apply this to public education. Mm-hmm. And how we can get more people learning about these things, whether directly or indirectly, and applying it to other areas of study like history, or applying to, you know, something like science, and putting intersectional studies and feminism and those kinds of things into the everyday, so kids and teenagers are learning about this at a much earlier point in life.
Right. I think that's a really important point. I think that's a good place to end on too for this conference, because I think that at the end of the day, that's kind
totally,
of, you know,
yeah,
want to share that knowledge. For sure. So yeah, why don't you tell listeners just a final quick and dirty way of rundown of the conference. When is it? What's happening?
For sure. Yeah. So it's happening on UBC campus, April 30th. It's a full day event. So we have catering. We will be providing food. It is free
mm-hmm.
of charge, so it's hopefully as accessible as it can be to mm-hmm. everyone. Our registration will be going up in the next couple weeks shortly. It'll be on Facebook. So if you search the F-Word Conference on Facebook, it should pop up, or grsjconference.wordpress.com. All our info's on there, but again, it'll be April 30th. It's a full day event, totally free of charge, and we've got an awesome lineup of speakers and workshops.
Cool.
And it's also going to just be in the second floor of the Nest.
Yes.
So it's all in one place.
Mm-hmm. Great. Cool. That's super good to know. Shruti and Michael, thank you so much for coming on today and talking.
Worries.
And I really look forward to the conference. Thanks
awesome.
So much.
Thanks so much.
Textbook CITR 101.9 FM. Up next is Discordy Radio. But first, quick little song from UBC a cappella just to wind down here. Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it. My name is Josh, and this is CITR 101.9 FM. CITR 101.9 FM. A cappella. They are here to perform Quitting Time by Shoshana Bean. Why don't you folks introduce yourself real quick?
Hi, I'm Katie, and I'm in the Unaccompanied Minors.
Hi, I'm Paula. I'm in Fermata.
I'm Allison. I'm also in Fermata.
Great. Thank you guys so much. I guess just take it away.
It's 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock
in the morning.
In the morning,
we still seem to be going round in circles. But what good am I to you if I can't carry the weight around for two? I hear that whistle blow. I'm punching my card. Oh, they tell me that true love shouldn't be this hard. Well, a warrior lives inside of me, but she's weary of the fight. I am afraid, but it's
still don't seem to appreciate me. I'm afraid that it's quitting time. Where's the payoff for the blood, the sweat, and the tears?